This is a true crime roundup from the On Deadline podcast. We explore crime stories reported on by Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm your host, Lauren Berry. First, we'll check in with some updates on developing true crime cases throughout the nation, starting with the case of Nick Reiner, who is accused of killing his parents, beloved director Rob Reiner, and producer Michelle Reiner. The couple is survived by two other children, as well as Rob's adopted daughter from his first marriage to director and actress Penny Marshall. Odyssey station KNX News has been covering the story since last December, when the Reiners' daughter discovered their bodies dead in their Brentwood home. Here's the latest on the case from this week.
Well, it was another court appearance for Nick Reiner this morning, but we are still actually a long way off from a potential trial. Natalie Tavidian has more from downtown L.A.
Nick Reiner was back in a downtown L.A. courtroom today, but instead of moving the case forward, it was delayed. His defense said they're still waiting on evidence, and prosecutors added they're still waiting on autopsy reports with more discovery expected soon. So the judge pushed things out, setting another preliminary hearing setting for September 15th. Reiner has pleaded not guilty to killing his parents, who were found dead inside their Brentwood home late last year, both victims of multiple sharp force injuries. He remains in custody without bail and could face the death penalty depending on how the case unfolds. And while the legal process continues, the family is still processing the loss, with his brother describing the moment he found out as life-changing and devastating. For now, this case remains in a holding pattern as both sides continue building toward the next step.
KNX News has also been covering a murder case involving Billboard charting musician David, stylized as D4VD.
Prosecutors revealing some of the evidence that they have against the singer David, charged with murdering 14-year-old Celeste Rivas Hernandez. And we need to warn you that some of the information that you hear may be very difficult to hear. Alex Silverman on what the latest court filing tells us.
There are horrifying details in here. And prosecutors actually use that word to describe how they say David prepared for and carried out the murder. They say he bought chainsaws online, knowing he had to silence the victim before she ruined his music career. Very soon after her arrival at his home, he stabbed the victim to death multiple times and stood by while she bled out, the filing says. He then used the chainsaws and an inflatable pool to protect the garage floor, prosecutors explain. The theory, backed up by text messages, is that Celeste, who was 13 when the two started their alleged sexual relationship, was jealous about other women she found out about and threatened to destroy a life and career that had shot to fame with the single Romantic Homicide. After the murder, prosecutors say David drove to Santa Barbara County to get rid of evidence, including Celeste's passport. But within a couple days, he was back in L.A. doing a radio interview about his new album. Then he went on tour. That's where he was when his Tesla was towed and the body was finally found more than 4 months later.
We have gone in depth into both the Reiner and David cases in previous true crime roundups. We've also been following this case, reported on by Odyssey station KRLD 1080 in Dallas. Tanner Horner, a former FedEx driver who has said he has an alter ego named Zero, admitted to sexually assaulting and killing 7-year-old Athena Strand in 2022. Here's the latest on his trial from KRLD.
Prosecutors crossed Dr. Eileen Ryan, who says during a session with Horner following his arrest, he admitted to killing Strand after the little girl saw him do a line of cocaine in the FedEx truck he was driving.
When he put her in the truck, in my opinion, he didn't plan on killing her. It wasn't until he recognized now it's so much worse.
She said Horner admitted to punching, kicking, and strangling the little girl, and then in a shocker, exposing himself to her before she died. The defense is claiming that mental illness and years of abuse requires the jury to give Horner life in prison. The prosecution is asking for the death penalty.
KRLD reported on another gruesome crime this week involving murder and arson allegations.
Police in Carrollton arrest a woman. They say she murdered her husband and then sat on their front porch while their house was burning. Police got a call about a stabbing early this morning at a home on Old Denton Road. When they got there, the house was on fire, and Carolina Marcius told them her husband, Ramon, still inside. Crews with Carrollton Fire Rescue had to come out to the scene. They got the man out, but he didn't make it. Now, the wife is under arrest for murder.
In Philadelphia, Odyssey station KYW News Radio also reported on a crime that involves alleged murder and arson.
A woman is dead and a man is in custody after authorities in Camden County say he stabbed her and then set a townhouse on fire. KYW's Nigel Thompson reports from Gloucester Township.
Roy Ramirez lives across Freedom Way in the Independence Townhomes complex from where crews battled an early morning fire in Gloucester Township. He says it quickly became apparent it was more than just a fire.
I was watching from my house, and then when I seen they were bringing out the body and all that stuff, that's when I tried to go see outside to see what's going on. And then we heard the family crying, he's crazy.
After the fire was out, the investigation began, led by the Camden County Prosecutor's Office and Gloucester Township Police. Authorities say the victim is a woman in her 50s and that a man is in custody. The man has yet to be charged in the case.
In addition to that report, multiple crime reports came out of KYW in Philly this week. Here's a report from Monday.
And Newark, Delaware police say 54-year-old Eric Pitts of Newark has been arrested and charged for allegedly slashing someone's neck with a box cutter. Officials say that Pitts and another person got into a couple of altercations Friday afternoon along the 300 block of East Main Street. According to authorities, this was during the second incident when Pitts seriously injured the victim. The victim has been treated and released from the hospital. Pitts was charged with first-degree assault and the possession of a deadly weapon during the commission of a felony. He is being held on $30,000 bail.
And here's another report from Wednesday.
An inmate at SCI Phoenix in Montgomery County has pleaded guilty to third-degree murder for killing his cellmate. 42-year-old Nathaniel Blows is sentenced to 8 to 16 years in prison for beating and choking 45-year-old Sean Harden to death in the overnight hours of October 31st into November 1st, 2024. During a court appearance last week, Blows interrupted the judge to say that he was tired of the ongoing court appearance and admitted to killing Harden. Blows was originally serving a 3.5 to 7 year sentence for firearms violation and for headbutting a police officer in the face in 2020. Harden was nearing the end of a 4 to 8 year sentence for molesting 3 children in 2014.
KYW reported this on Wednesday as well.
One of the suspects accused of shooting and killing a 14-year-old outside a Roxboro football field nearly 4 years ago has pleaded guilty to the murder of 2 teenagers. KYW's Crime and Justice reporter Kristen Johansson the details.
It was DNA from a shell casing that matched Sakir McClendon to the shooting death of 14-year-old Nicholas Alizalde and to the injuries of 4 others following a football scrimmage at Roxboro High School in September of 2022. Prosecutors say detectives also tied McClendon Instagram conversations and phone records talking about the shooting, which they say was motivated by an altercation involving one of their friends. 21-year-old McClendon's DNA also matched evidence in the murder of Nafis Betran Hill, a 16-year-old who was gunned down in April of 2023 at 23rd and Montgomery in North Philly. Another man, Reneef Allen, also pleaded guilty. McClendon pleaded guilty to 2 third-degree murder charges for both teens, as well as 4 counts of attempted murder for the injured Roxboro teens, as well as gun and conspiracy charges.
He's set to be sentenced in September.
On Thursday, KYW provided an update to a mass shooting case.
Police say they have made an arrest in a mass shooting last year in Grays Ferry that left 4 men dead. Zaki Harrell is charged with murder and numerous other offenses. Police say he was arrested today at a home on the 2200 block of Beechwood Street in West Passyunk. That's a 20-minute walk from the scene of the shooting early on the morning of July 7th, 2025. In that incident, 12 people between the ages of 15 and 24 were shot. 3 men, aged 19, 23, and 24, were pronounced dead a short time later at area hospitals. A 4th victim died last month.
Now we'll take a moment to hear from St. Louis County Prosecuting Attorney Melissa Price Smith. She recently joined the Dave Glover Show out of Odyssey Station KMOX in St. Louis to talk about a wide range of topics, including the psychology of violent criminals, like those accused of the crimes we've just heard about.
I have a weird question for you, and I'm not trying to in any way trap you here or there, but you spent your career dealing with people who commit crimes. And I'm not talking about, they all have beady eyes. Like, is there any commonality that, like, oh, yeah, I see this over and over again, like bad childhoods and this, like... You could go into a sociology class and talk about this.
Yeah, or I could be the subject of a sociology. They could study study right. My brain.
Right.
I think the scariest thing for anybody who does this type of work or who's in any type of law enforcement realizes that there is no commonality.
That's scary.
They look like the rest of us.
That's scary.
Walk amongst us. And I think that's what's the most scary. And, you know, an interesting thing about that question, years ago, when people would ask me when I was doing just the sexual assault cases, they would ask me, does it ever affect you? Does it ever mess you up? And for some reason, I thought in order to appear strong, I would always say no, it doesn't. And in the last few years, I've realized it's not strong to say no. It's strong to say yes. And because of that, we're actually creating a wellness unit in our office, because I realize if I would say no, it doesn't affect me. I realize probably a lot of our young prosecutors feel the same. So now we're creating a wellness unit.
Another recent crime that's made headlines everywhere this past week was the assassination attempt at the White House Correspondents' Dinner last Saturday. For some more insight into Cole Thomas Allen, the 31-year-old arrested crime and terror analyst Brad Garrett joined A New Morning on Odyssey Station WBEN News and Talk in Buffalo.
Luckily, Brad, nobody was killed, but this could have been much worse, and we're learning more about the person behind this through images and what's come out in a courtroom. What are you noticing from some of the things that we've learned about this shooter that maybe sounds familiar to you?
So let's start with sort of this shooter as a person. You know, super smart, apparently. A bachelor's degree in engineering, master's degree in computer science, was a tutor to students who apparently thought a lot of him. He was considered, you know, kind and humble, et cetera. But he's a great example of, yes, he apparently was those things on the surface, but inside he was seething, and in particular angry at the current administration's staff and the decisions they're making in reference to ICE, Iran, Ukraine. His list went on and on. And so if you take that, now obviously there's a lot of people upset with the administration, and that's fine. But no one's going to go do what he attempted to do, basically, except for a few people. And so what happens is that if you look at these common variables, mass shooters tend to be isolated, which apparently he was a super shy. He would eat lunch alone, according to co-workers at this tutoring service. Spent a lot of time online, apparently built video games of some sort. And at some point, his anger and rage then turned to obsession. Then obsession sort of turned to, I feel powerless. I think something needs to be changed. And I'm going to be the one to change it. Totally irrational, of course, but the point being driven. And it's the combination of all of that and 10 other variables I could throw out that sort of drive these people to actually create a plan. Because obviously he had to have a fairly detailed plan. He had to rent a hotel room in advance. He had to get to the hotel without anybody knowing he had weapons, which meant translated into he went by train from Southern California all the way to Washington, D.C. And I'm going to assume he got there a day or so early, that he started doing surveillance of how do we get to the ballroom without getting caught. And obviously he found this vulnerable stairwell that was unlocked and his ability to get down it. And, you know, in recent days, the government has released a photograph of him in his, it would appear, his hotel room. But right before the shooting, it doesn't surprise me one bit, because there's a certain part of power here, feeling powerless, but now feeling powerful, and that I'm going to take action. I'm going to do something. And all of that creates the justification in their mind to go and commit these acts. Now, clearly, if he'd have come out of that stairwell with an automatic weapon, we'd be having a different story. Sadly, to talk about. Thank goodness that wasn't the case. But I do think he fits many of the variables I just described, and maybe some others, typically, that occurs in mass shooters.
Something else that I think occurs with mass shooters, law enforcement was tipped by his brother in Connecticut. shortly after the incident. Is that often the case where family members see something, but it's just a little bit too late when they decide to go to law enforcement?
Yeah. After the act investigation by law enforcement typically turns up sometimes very specific disturbing information that was never passed. Others, it may be less so, and where people are concerned, worried about their relative or loved one, but not concerned that they are going to do something like the act that he attempted to commit. Well, did commit, just wasn't successful. Yes, that's fairly common.
You're talking about this shooter, and you know, compared to someone like Luigi Mangione, who also had written things on the bullets, this shooter had things written on guns. I mean, it seems like they don't really care that much about being caught, and they're just looking to send whatever message they think they're sending.
No doubt. You also have to look at these as suicide missions. I mean, I don't think, Mangione obviously survived and successfully got away from the scene. That wasn't caught until a lot of hours later in Pennsylvania. That this act by them was supposed to be so important and so life-changing for so many people that they were willing to die. So, and that's why many of them do die at the scene. So that's part of it. But that also lets you know how obsessed they are and what they're doing. The level of, I guess, desperation and rage that it is so high that they feel like they just absolutely have to do what they ultimately end up doing.
Thank you so much for listening to this True Crime Roundup from the On Deadline podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to WWJ News Radio in Detroit, KNX News in Los Angeles, KYW News Radio in Philadelphia, KRLD 1080 in Dallas, The Dave Glover Show out of KMOX in St. Louis, A New Morning out of WBEN News Talk in Buffalo, and WBBM News Radio in Chicago. You can find these programs on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts. You can find these true crime roundups by subscribing to the On Deadline podcast, the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, or the Bitter Academia podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.